who owns the land?
Who owns the land?
Who owns the land? Could it be that there's a connection? Who owns the land? To my daily eviction. Who owns the land? And the extermination. Who owns the land? Of the Native American. Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? I am just a white man who owns the land. I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? Problem. For only one reason, my present, which is a question, who owns the land? The homeless, our problem, for only one reason, your present, which is a question, who owns the land? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home?
And welcome to Bathurst Pier's Broadsides. June 2nd, 2002. This is a 3.5 hour show. We go and go and go here on 96.3 FM. And hopefully, we go with your participation. 427-3772 is the call-in number. So hop on the phone if you can find one, 427-3772, and let us know what you think about what we're talking about and what we're not talking about. Sometimes that's as important as what we're talking about. I know that at City Council, I'm concerned about that all the time, what's not on the City Council agenda, like human rights for homeless people, poor people, and most everybody else that isn't already guaranteed those rights, which is most of us. Lots of stuff happening today. I'm going to begin by picking up where I left off at the end of the Thursday show. I have a show Thursday 6 to 8. I was playing interviews on the street, talking to a woman about massive drug busts downtown a week or two ago for small quantities of marijuana. And the next time you run into dear Mayor Chris Crone, that oh-so-liberal mayor who just wants to help us all out, ask him why the hell he isn't doing anything about the drug war downtown. The massive terror against young people downtown trying to sell a quarter of an ounce of marijuana. Come on, folks. That's a felony they're pushing people into jail for. They're criminalizing people for here in Santa Cruz, in our own town. That's not Bush and Ashcroft. That's not Davis. That's Santa Cruz's Mayor Chris Crone, Santa Cruz's Chief of Police Steve Belcher, the Santa Cruz County Sheriff Mark Tracy, who also runs the jail, the City Attorney John Barisoni, and the District Attorney Kate Canlis. Those are the villains. That's the lineup of responsible parties. These are the people you have to contact to end the local drug war. And so the next time you hear Skidmark Bob throwing softballs at Chris Crone, as he did on March 12th, that was 4 hours before Crone had me arrested at City Council for making a "you're a fascist" type comment salute at him, ask yourself, whether it's nice to play softball with these politicians, whether it makes any sense whatsoever. Oh, good goodness, they might give Free Radio Santa Cruz a nice little certificate and a vote of confidence. Well, isn't that nice? What about the rest of the community that's being harassed downtown, criminalized? What about the lack of rent control? Come on, folks, let's get real here. Let's talk about what these people are doing and what they're not doing. Let's talk about who's responsible. And don't just listen to me. You can hear the voices of the folks on the streets.
On May 22nd, we're walking with a woman and a baby in a stroller.
We talked to
her. Who's got some rather grim news for us?
Well, today they arrested about 12 or 13 people for selling marijuana. For the past, I guess, couple of weeks, they've been having undercovers come up here every single day and getting to know the kids and getting to know who's who. And today they decided to go ahead and arrest every single one of them. And they arrested them all, brought them up. I went up to the police station earlier today to check on my boyfriend who got arrested with a bunch of people. And they were having a big convention, a big party, with all the undercovers there and talking about how great it was. They busted all these people. So
where did this happen? Are we actually nearing the area as we walk along the sidewalk?
Yeah, it happened right on the corner up here, and they were arresting everybody behind New Leaf. They'd have a guy come up and ask to buy some, and they'd go around the back of New Leaf and arrest him.
And we're talking about a pound of marijuana, perhaps?
No, like just tiny little bits of marijuana.
A quarter of an ounce?
Yeah, quarters, 20 sacks, just little bits. Nothing big, nothing large.
And in essence, however, they're charging these people with felonies? Your boyfriend is charged with felonies?
He's being charged with felonies. Sales of marijuana is a felony.
And how many folks were arrested?
I'd have to say about 12 or 13, somewhere around there. Quite a few people.
And I see that we're just passing Borders hippie bench.
Yep, that's where everybody was getting busted at, and pull them over here right behind New Leaf. And as soon as they got back here, the guy they were selling run off, and about 8 cops would mob up on them and arrest them.
And so what are you asking a radio audience to do here? We're looking for donations to get your...
Donations to get my man out of jail. If you see me, I'm downtown, I got a baby. My name's Ashley. Just help me out. I'm trying to get him out of jail so we can get out of this town. That's about it.
Right. Well, there you have it, folks. Our law enforcement authorities are dealing with serious crime downtown. Thanks, Ashley.
You're welcome.
We're talking with...
Sure.
Sugar, you're here on the corner of the beautiful SoCal and Pacific.
Oh, yes.
Where we have only one hippie bench left.
Yes, they took the other one out.
And it's about 8:20. And you said that the busts today were numbered about three?
Yeah, it's like three of them. Three people?
There used to be.
And did you actually see the bus itself? Or?
No, one of them I did. They had three guys sitting down. I think they only arrested one of them, though.
Would they die then?
Right? How many police were involved?
I think two or three.
And what was the crime these people were guilty of?
Possession of marijuana.
With intent to sell?
Yes, I guess so. Yes.
And I noticed right now there are only about half a dozen of us standing here, but about 10 minutes ago there was like 20 or...
Yeah.
So it's really kind of the scene changes by the moment.
Oh, yes. People come and go all day long.
Any hassles from police at this particular location to get rid of people?
Yeah, off and on. They'll have mellow days, and then they'll have days where they come and try to get everybody off the corner as much as possible.
Did that happen today or in the last couple of days?
Besides taking up a bench, so you can't sit anymore, it hasn't been too bad.
So we can't harass them.
Yeah.
I think it's harassed by the homeless, dude. And it's not right, because we all have rights like humans, you know? No matter if you're rich or poor.
Right. You should be able to sit.
No matter if you have items or not, we're all humans. We all have the same feeling.
Any other specific, like incidents today other than this big drug bust or this little drug bust, whichever it was? Are there harassment for sitting on the sidewalk with the hosts involved? Any problems?
Yeah.
Is this undercover vicious artist responsible for any...
Nope. That was it for the day.
Alright.
Yeah.
Who plays the xylophone?
It's a suspicious xylophone player. It looks really...
I walked around in a bathrobe with a tape recorder, They get me for impersonating Get a Horse Norse.
There you go, yeah. The man is...
But he knows his rights, so that's what it's all about.
Others have their...
My left.
Now you're talking. So you say that you had a problem because you had a sign about tarot readings?
Well, I was doing free tarot readings, and the sign says in big letters, free, and a lady came up to me, the hospitality downtown guy people.
Today, or...?
Yeah, today. And she was, what did she say? Oh, yeah, she was, we got a call, a complaint saying you're trying to sell stuff. And I was like, if you look at the sign, it says free, And she was like, well, we got a call saying you're trying to sell stuff. And I'm like, look, I'm not selling anything. No, I I mean, donations accepted, you know, but other than that, it was free readings. That's pretty much it.
He then left you alone?
Yeah.
What time did this happen?
It was about 12 o'clock.
Thank you. What's your name?
Chris Moore.
Thanks, Chris. So we're talking to Charles Waters. Charles, you are the son of
Kathy and Danny Garrigo.
There are folks who live in a vehicle. They
are at home with 10 dogs, and they don't bother nobody.
Harvey West.
Yeah, Harvey West.
And I know that they've also, Kathy's also been employed at the Homeless Services Center for a while.
Yes. I am homeless like my mom.
Uh-huh.
And she did lose her, she lost her car, motor home. She lost the dogs. And they took everything for just because they can't camp there. And that's not right.
Now, if I understand, Kathy, of course it isn't. But I understand that after she anted up a lot of money, she got her dogs and her vehicle back.
Yes, but they're doing it again.
Now, when is the latest threat? When did that happen?
A week ago, last I heard. My mom been harassed by the cops, and my mom and Danny, they are so scared to come out of the car. They're probably scared to go out in the open just because of the cops. It's not right to hide in your house because of this cops.
Now, how old are you yourself?
I'm 22.
And are you inside or outside?
I'm outside. I'm homeless.
Uh-huh. And have you been hassled for sleeping outside yourself?
No, I'm too smart. I hide somewhere they can't find me.
Inside the city or outside the city?
Outside the city.
Inside a vehicle or outside a vehicle?
Outside the vehicle.
So, are you planning to stay here? I mean, have you been here pretty much most of your life?
Or? I was born and raised here in Santa Cruz. I mean, I was born in Stockton, but a week later I was raised here and came here in Santa Cruz. I've been here since 13 years now. And it's not the same like it used to be. And because before, the people would help the homeless in the 80s and 90s, and now they just want to take us away. And it's not right. And I want to see something done for the homeless people. Because they're all human, just like us.
Pizza. Give us a place to exist without getting a ticket.
Yeah.
Do it. All right, now how about forming a union, folks? Form a union will be a get-a place.
No, because then I have to hang out with all these other donkeys and tweakers and shit that I don't necessarily particularly like.
Always a problem.
If there's enough space, then like the stoners could be in one spot, the drunks, like a rainbow gathering. You got A camp, you got B camp, you got... That's what he was going to say. Talk to him, dude. I'm just a monkey.
Now, we see here a sign in front of you which says, broke, bored, and sober by choice. Anything helps, even a smile. God bless you.
The other side says,
munchies suck.
When you got no money,
anything helps, even a smile. God bless you.
But no, you gotta put the comment in there. God bless you.
Oh, okay. Well, you can check this out yourself here in front of the Palomar. If you happen to find this man, perhaps.
Don't try to buy nothing from me, because the cops hassle me all the time.
There you have it.
I don't make didgeridoos, and I don't make really pretty jewelry.
You're
right.
That's the story. Yeah. Say that again, could you please?
I have the right to sit here and shut up and beg for change because it's Santa Cruz.
Whereas your point of view is?
We're all humans, you know what, don't matter. I think we should help the weak. And then take from the... It's not right. It used to be give from the, take from the rich and give to the poor. Now it's all about taking away from the poor and giving to the rich. And we need something, a system for the homeless, a program to help the rural people.
They don't
people.
Care about the homeless because the homeless don't make them no money. Wake up, monkey.
That's why we need to do something about it.
In the neck with the chicken bone.
That's why we all got together and do something about it. You're doing this, nothing's going to be done.
So you're going to organize, do some organizing.
Hell yeah.
Get some land. Hey, the homies, you can
I think if we do something about it, we could do something and get something done.
Your name, sir, is?
Matthew. They called me Lost and Found.
Where
this
came from?
Let's see. We started in L.A. We came all the way. We got to San Luis Obispo and jumped to a freighter up to south of Watsonville. Yeah, Salinas. Yeah.
You one of them hobo types, that what you're saying?
Oh, that was my first time. It was adventurous.
Never done it myself.
Yeah, it was fun. It was kind of cold. Couldn't sleep at night, though.
Wow. And you two were involved in this adventure?
Incriminating evidence.
They can't see you. Take his picture, buddy. Over here, officer. Yeah, see you guys later. I gotta run.
And that was Sums interviews with locals on the streets. We're going to have more of that coming up here on Bathurst Spears Broadsides on 96.3. Right now, we're going to put through a quick call to a guest we had about a month and a half ago to get an update on a continuing story. We'll see if we can catch him at home. He was about to go out. This is actually...
Hello, Free Radio calling for Jake Oltoff.
Yes, Jake.
Hey, Jake.
just mention that we went through an interview on air with you about a month and a half, 2 months ago. You want to kind of summarize what that was all about?
Oh, well, summarize, there's so much in this. Basically, the UC was, first they tried to, my wife is a medical marijuana user, and the police, our son, she was over at a neighbor's house helping.
You live up at UC.
Right. Somebody moved from the one of the apartments here. Our son had the phone and had dialed 911, so the police came responsive. They came in and they took a plant and told her, well, you know, she needed to have her paperwork. She had only talked to the doctor about this, hadn't actually had him write anything out. So,
What condition does your wife have that requires
me? Endometriosis.
Which is?
It's like a, she gets really bad pain from before and after menstrual period and especially during.
I see.
And she has a, like the buildup of a...
So this was UC police who took her marijuana?
Right. And then...
In front of the children, or?
In front of the children. Oh, well, yeah, they took it. They didn't cite her arrest or anything. They just took it, and... she knew she was complying with the law, and she told him that. And so they took it. Well, anyway, they ended up referring it down for prosecution, even though they didn't have any evidence that that it was illegal. And so after being booked, she before being booked, she got the doctor to write out, you know, not only that she had this condition, but that that they had talked about it well in advance of the police seizure.
She's you're both UCSC employees, or you live up there as students? Can remind me.
Yeah, I'm a student up here.
Uh-huh.
And my wife was a student here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, student housing.
Prior to me, right. What was I going to say? Anyway, so they took it and ended up filing charges, which were dismissed because...
How many times did she have to go to court?
I think twice. But
did the marijuana ever get returned?
No, it wasn't even. It was just a small plant. It wasn't even. I mean, there was no.
But it was your property.
There was no marijuana on it. It was just a leafy plant, a small leafy plant.
I see. So, but
we kind of figured that because it was like on a Friday or a Saturday morning, that by the time she could talk to her doctor and get. Him to write out something that they might, you know, that because they said she could have it back if they went there, but we just figured that, well, it's not going to be alive anymore. I mean, I don't think they have a grow room there that they keep and sustain.
So they took and essentially destroyed your plant.
It was
plant.
Like a hydroponic type. It was, you know what I'm saying? It needed to be cared for or wouldn't have survived. So we basically figured it wouldn't be it wouldn't be of any value by the time we got it back. Is what we figured, so we didn't pursue getting it back.
Uh-huh. Did they offer it back?
At the time they took it, they said, well, you know, if you bring documentation or whatever.
Right, but when the case was dismissed, did they offer it back?
Oh, no, I mean, it was dismissed. You gotta understand, they didn't even file charges for, like, about a month before.
Uh-huh.
They weren't investigating it, because they didn't come back and attempt to find out who our doctor was or talk to...
So it was sort of long delay.
Doctors. Well, they held it, basically, and then because I was critical of the UC police, so there's this other story. About 3 or 4 months before this happened, we had reported
child molester?
Exactly, that was a UC employee up here.
At a child care center.
Exactly.
Right. That sounds like pretty dynamite kind of accusations.
Right, and like the Catholic Church, the UC doesn't want these things in the public eye, so they, you know, basically they have their own investigative team up here known as the UCPD.
The name of the child molester in the child care center?
Okay, well, it was at the Family Student Housing Child Care Center, and the employee's name was Eddie Joe.
Have you had any indication since then that you've been wrong in your allegations?
Actually, there is new. I don't want to say too much. There's new
indications.
There's new information that we've received. Actually, that shows that the UC police really did have more knowledge that there was something going on. We found out about other kids.
Well, you know, wait a minute. You're accusing the UCSC police of covering up. But we know that our national agencies, like the FBI, never do that.
Uh huh.
Go ahead.
being sarcastic,
Jen,
folks.
You understand it. I mean, it's not hard to grasp that they have their own police force operating basically. And we talked to DA Kate Canlis, actually, like a couple days after they had referred this case down. And she even told us that she had no interest in pursuing a medical marijuana case against anybody.
Well,
that
did
was
you have any interest?
And then that, yet we still had to like.
Did you have any interest in pursuing a case against either child molesters or police and university authorities that cover up that in a child care facility?
Well, basically, she said, as of the UC police, we were talking to her about this, and she said they're answerable only like to the governor. Basically, is the. You know, I mean, there is no. She said she has absolutely no jurisdiction.
Oh, hogwash! I mean, it's a crime. Child molesting is a state crime.
No. I know about that. But yeah. I was talking about the UC police covering it up and then retaliating against us, basically for criticizing their handling the case. Even we talked to Deputy DA Christine Long, and the first thing she said to us is that she apologized. They had subjected my son, I don't know, to a total like 5 or 6 interviews between the DA. Well, the DA did one interview, and they had videotaped, and they kept doing repeated interviews that she said, you know, was unacceptable, and was totally out of line with any investigative procedures for these kinds of cases. And we realized after thinking about it, after that meeting with her, we were kind of, we didn't really, like, think that much about the UC police, because they were telling us, oh, yeah, we believe you, and we totally want to, like, pursue this, and it's the DA that's dragging her feet. And then we went there, and then we realized, oh, because what they did was they seized on minor little things that they called contradictions.
Discrepancies?
Yeah, in my son's story, right? But they
how old is your son?
One of them was that he said that he was molested once, that he was molested 10 times, and that he was molested 100 times. You know, what does that show except for that he wasn't keeping count, that it was like...
How old is your son?
He's 5 now. But see, he was only about 3 when this occurred.
Uh-huh. How's he doing?
Actually, he's almost 6 now. Well, you know, he's, it definitely had a negative leader effect on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd like to say we took him to some counseling, and he basically went through a therapy regimen already. But you know, I don't really want to divulge any, like, personal problem that
no
he's having
problem.
Out of respect for his privacy.
I appreciate that.
But let me just say that it's definitely been a big ordeal for him, and for us, too, having to care for him.
And there's actually a third chapter in this. The university, not content with allowing the harassment for the marijuana, allowing your son to be molested, or as you perceive it, or as it happened, as you report to us, and allowing this individual, I guess, did they fire him? Did they transfer him? What happened?
Well, yeah, we found out more about this, that apparently most of the people that worked here used to work, or the supervisors here, a lot of them have ties to the Cabrillo College daycare over there, and they had come here, and apparently he took a better position or something. Basically, they didn't transfer him out, is what they were telling us, is that basically he was offered a job that was a...
So he's still taking care of kids?
Well, he's... apparently, from what I've heard, he's not directly, or this is what they're saying. I haven't actually, like, looked into any of this. I don't know what I've heard, is that he's in, like, a supervisory position now, that he doesn't...
He takes care of people who are taking care of kids.
Exactly. That's what.
They kicked him upstairs.
Told, I have no idea exactly what the truth is.
But
that
the third thing they did to you, as I understand from our interview, was they attempted to evict you because you were making, essentially you were blowing the whistle. Is that true?
Right. First, it was they gave us a 24-hour notice saying that we had violated our housing agreements, which said that you can't have or manufacture any illegal drugs.
This is the UCSC authorities.
What's that?
The UCSC authorities did this.
Yes. The first notice, Vice Chancellor Jean Marie Scott gave me a notice that said, even though we had something, we had talked to some legal counsel, and they said, yeah, definitely, that under the California law, they can't, like, have you move out in 24 hours, or you know, just kick you out summarily without a due process.
They tried to scare you into leaving.
Yeah, they gave me a 24-hour notice.
Right.
Said, you know, I have 3 kids, we got a house. Yeah, I mean, it's like, even if we didn't have to sleep and take care of the kids, there's no way we could move out in 24 hours. Like, it was just, like ridiculous, even if it were legal. But, and that was because, supposedly, we'd violated the law. They wanted to get us out there because I think they knew that, you know, it was going to be dismissed, that because we were not violating any laws and not actually violating the contract, because under California law, it wasn't an illegal.
Well, glad you're not living in federal housing. One strike and you're out, you know.
Well, see, since it's the University of California, you know, you figure they have to give some deference to the will of the California voters. So, anyway, but what happened was is they, after that was dismissed, well, that we didn't leave. We just refused to leave because we knew it was illegal the way they were proceeding about it. And that they were citing that as the reason. When that was dismissed, then they proceeded with us again. Actually, the California Rural Legal Aid, mm-hmm. supposedly was representing us or going to represent us, or mm-hmm. considering that we had been consulting with them. Apparently, they wrote a letter to the UC telling them, you know, what you're doing is illegal. And we found out that they called the California Rural Legal Aid, and California Rural Legal Aid actually aided them in affecting us at that point. Said, you know what? Why are you doing it like this? You don't need a reason. And because we saw a letter, our lawyer got a letter that thanked them, saying, oh, thanks for the information. We're going to do it according to how you said.
So in other words,
basically, and
your advocates went and helped the other side.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And basically told them, oh, why are you needing a reason? You don't need a reason. Just go say that you could do it without a reason. Here's how you do it. And so they tried that, but of course, it's kind of hard after you've had a reason and then it's gone. To like say that you
like
have no reason, because really with all this is retaliation basically.
Yeah, and in California though, they don't need a reason to evict you. If they're evicting you for some bad reasons,
right.
like the fact that you're organizing or you're a whistleblower, that's retaliatory eviction, and that is illegal.
But that is for private owners of property. They don't need a reason. Actually, under a case called Mitchell versus Poole, the courts in California have upheld, and this is like a pretty, I'm quoting from memory, but that basically that government-owned housing is a special class because it's owned by the government and it should be available to all citizens. It's an entitlement if you meet the requirements. And the case Mitchell versus Poole was directly relating to a case of Section 8 housing
mm-hmm.
where they were wanting to move people out without cause. And they said, no, you don't need cause if you're private, but if you're receiving government funding,
mm-hmm.
then you're not under that and that you must show just cause to evict anyone.
So there's just eviction protections in
Santa
Cruz.
Right, we tried to use that as the initial response, and
interesting.
And so the judge in the Santa Cruz...
So that's available for people who have any kind of government funding goes to the landlord.
Exactly, but the judge in this case, he didn't really see, I guess because it wasn't directly the case, was involved Section 8 and not educational housing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you read the philosophy, which I was just quoting from, about it being a special class.
Which judge was it?
You know what? I don't remember.
Attic, Kelly, Kelsey.
You know what?
Yeah.
The university settled so quick that I wasn't even in the courtroom that long.
So the university is settling. You're still living up there, right?
Yes, right. Yeah, no, they didn't want to take a jury trial. And they pretty much offered, we offered to agree to leave at the end of the year when basically I'm planning to be through.
Mm-hmm.
And
in December?
Right,
mm-hmm.
right. And they agreed to give us basically to waive past rent that we hadn't been paying. So
you came out with a small financial...
Well, after you take out our... what we were figuring is that they would be, if we prevailed, then we would be entitled to attorney costs.
Mm-hmm.
And we figured because it was a retaliatory eviction under the law, you're entitled to a $500 punitive award if you prove retaliation.
Right.
So we were looking at that, and it equaled a little bit more than that when we totaled it up. So we, you know, figuring, well, this is what the best that we could have done had we prevailed before a jury. I mean, there wasn't too many reasons.
Who was your attorney?
That would be Ed Fry.
That's right. I remember now. Ed has been fighting for civil rights for people like yourselves for a long time.
Yeah, he did a really bang up job. We're pretty happy with his.
Any further harassment since the trial or since the settlement?
Oh well, you know, what's funny is that we had said in there specifically we had been having a problem, and this is another reason why they probably wanted to evict us. We've been complaining because we live next door to the laundry room, and there's posted hours, but they hadn't been locking up the rooms, and we've been being woke up by people, you know, drying their tennis shoes at 3 in the 4 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And And one of the things when they were making the settlements, we were like, well, could you also agree to lock up that laundry room, you know, like you're supposed to with posted hours? Because they have, like, there's Jenny and Matt Carrillo. I'm not sure. I think it's Jenny is the RA here. And she gets free rent every month. She lives two doors down from the thing, and she has a key to the locker room. She's supposed to, they're supposed to be out doing a patrol every night about the time that the, I mean, it's almost like they're purposely not locking up. Well, when we requested that, she said, oh, well, we don't want to put that as part of the settlement, but I'll just, I'll tell you that I'll try and make sure that gets enforced. And we were like, wow, the first 2 days after the thing, they actually had the RAs locking it up. But
For the next 3 years, or the next...
But yeah, but for the next 27 days after that, it's almost, then now it seems like that they, it's almost like they, I think they do it on purpose.
Maybe what you need to do is just go knock on her door, every night at 3 a.m. and say, excuse me, you know.
I thought about that.
Go with your bathrobe and slippers, you know. That's what I, call me and I'll bring along my bathrobe. I'm pretty good at bathrobe.
Well, I was calling the, I'm not sure if still there was, I think her name's Candace Anderson. She used to be the manager here. And I guess she took a disability for some back problem or something and never returned. I don't know if she retired or what.
Well, let us...
But I was calling her every night when they, and saying, oh, at home. She wrote me a letter saying that I was harassing her.
I see. Well, just go knock on the... they're not very far away from you, the manager.
No, they're like 2 doors down.
Yeah, just walk. Of course, I suppose that you don't want to... It's always difficult when the neighbors are on bad terms with each other, but if the neighbors are managers and they're acting inappropriately, then
right.
What else can you do?
I don't think I should be the one that should have to crack the whip on them. I mean, they are getting like they're getting a free two-bedroom apartment every month to do not too much work, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I expect a full report on this next week. I want to know if you've been able to get those tennis shoes out of the dryer, man.
Okay. Thanks,
Bob. Hey, listen, is there anything that any of us can do to help out? Anybody you want the people on the air to call or write to or express their concerns about?
Well,
why don't you think about that and give me a call on Thursday, or leave a message, and this is of course to listeners too, and you can always leave a message 24 hours a day at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we can pass it on at the next show.
Okay.
We've been talking with Jake Olthoff, who ran for city council in 2000, and who has also been struggling up at UCSC to stop the harassment of himself and his family. Thanks for letting us know what's happening, Jake.
Okay, bro.
Alrighty.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, your Broadsides, my Broadsides, our Broadsides. Give us a call at 427-3772, and away we will go. I'm not sure if that's a selection or a pocked disc, so we're going to have to ponder that one. We were listening to interviews on the street, and we're going to hear a few more of them, and then we're going to perhaps get into some selections from the Right to Sleep Summit, which we had at the beginning of May here in Santa Cruz. Really interesting dialogue between members of Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon, a self-run homeless encampment, Tent City 3 in Seattle, another one, and Isla Vista, California, a third homeless run, not to mention Camp Paradise is, of course, it's kind of moved onto a church property and become a sort of a small private group that doesn't really have the same kind of significance it did back in the day, but still, there's always hope for the future. We're going to be talking a bit about Camp Paradise and hopes for a second, broader, more inclusive, more democratically run Camp Paradise later in the show. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. Stay with us.
It's about 8:35. We're outside the Java House, which is closed, talking to...
Susie.
Susie, you can we reveal your place of employment?
Of course. I work at the Java House.
And you yourself actually observe undercover folks coming in and out? By that I mean undercover police officers?
Occasionally, yes, but I don't know if
What are the telltale signs of the undercover police officer?
I've seen them in their cop car before, actually.
I see. So you actually can make these guys, so to speak. Both, are they men mostly, or are they women too?
I've only seen men, actually.
And how many undercover agents would you say you've seen in the last couple weeks?
Coming
into the Java House?
Maybe three.
If my suspicions about all three of them were correct, that is.
I know that the Dry Meadows used to be quite a hangout for the police and also for city council members. And I see you have a new sign here on top of the Dry Meadows, but aren't you closing a little early?
Yeah, we have been closing early lately, and there's a problem with that. We want people down here, we want to stay open later, but there's not a crowd anymore. And so we're working on that. But yeah, we're good with the council, with the city council, the Jazz Society, all that stuff. I think there's the regular cops that come in here and get their coffees in full uniform also. Mm-hmm. So I think we're pretty cool with everyone, actually.
Right. Well, look at these two there.
Except them, because we're closed right now.
Yeah. Interesting. They're supposed to meet me, but they don't recognize me sitting here on the sidewalk.
Oh, those two?
Yes. Anything else for Free Radio you want to say?
Come to Java, where it's the coolest place to be.
Hey, thank you, Susie.
Some coffee from me, Susie.
That rhyme gets. And Susie, you want to add perhaps an additional lyric to that?
Yeah. Nice, huh?
Thank you.
That's it.
Thank you. And, of course, word seems to be the Java House is losing business. It looks kind of quiet there at night. I don't know if it's because everybody is being driven out of town by the high rents, or it's choosing the more upscale Fern Bar yuppie joints, or it's too exhausted to go in at night, or what. I'm not sure what the problem is. I had a running feud with the Java House for about 7 years, not really of my own making. I was evicted from the Java House for publicizing their, they evicted a number of homeless activists, and I wrote about it in the Street Shit Sheet, my occasional homeless newsletter, and I spoke about it, and I was accused of writing graffiti on the Java House walls about it, of all things. And then for 7 years, they barred me from the Java House until Steve Argue, bless his soul, the city council candidate from 2000, who spoke out on issues as wide-ranging as fair wages, community control of police, civil rights for the homeless, numerous other issues. He told the Java House management that his group would not meet there unless I was allowed to come into the Java House, and suddenly their barrier dissolved, and I was allowed back in. And I haven't had any problems since. I mean, I'm not, either a violent or disruptive person by nature, and the claims that I am are just not true. Now, if we're doing a protest action of some sort against people who are discriminating against a class of people, homeless people, then naturally one gets a bit louder and one tries to make the issue clearer to the public. But generally speaking, I get a bad rap, folks. I gotta tell you. That's my view. So, boo-hoo. That's my perspective. And I hope the Java House does continue to get the business it needs to stay open late, because I think we need these late night coffee shops. People who are outside, who are cold, need them as a chance to come inside. I'm not too clear what the Java House is doing in terms of poor people and homeless people these days. I'd like to hear from folks both pro and con, if there is a pro and con, plus other businesses. I mean, how are businesses treating people downtown without a lot of money? I'd like to know about that. How are all-nighters like Denny's and the Santa Cruz Diner treating people? Important for folks who have no place to go late at night. Give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Let me know what your thoughts are on this. And give a call on the radio. We're on right now. We'll be on until 1:30, 427-3772.
Yeah.
And it sounds like the invasion of the AM folks. Actually, sometimes I record on tapes that have previously been recorded, and it looks like there was a little bit of that sweet AM music on there, which is actually, I kind of like that kind of stuff. But I don't want to play it on the show at this time. I want to instead go back to city council meeting. We had one this week, last week actually, Tuesday, and I was mercilessly cut off repeatedly by Kennedy, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and think even Premax stuck his oar into the muddied water. I played a selection from this on Thursday, and the issue was Alibaba's Cafe and Sushi Now, that Alibaba is apparently going out of business and transferring his lease to someone else, and they were voting on that issue, and I tried to bring up the issues of the way the business was being managed, the problems down there, and I was cut off and told you could not talk about anything but the transfer of the lease. And I said, fine, that's what I'm talking about. You mean I can only say yes or no? What are you talking about? And I never got a satisfactory answer except that Crone insisted on cutting me off and moving on, which is a violation of a law called the Brown Act, which requires that the public be given periods of comment, that they not be cut off for content. You can cut them off if they're really off topic. You can cut them off if they speak too long at the mic. But you can't cut them off for the content of what they're saying if it's on topic, just because you don't want to hear it. And that is what these folks were doing. And later in that, they also did the same thing with Ed Davidson, who's a sort of a perennial city council fellow. He's a planner. He's been trying for years to get the council to listen to him on issues ranging from the Dolphin Lee debacle, the Fitzmaurice scheme, to essentially uproot an entire homeless, now homeless community, but Hispanic community in the Beach Flats and the Dolphin and Lee apartments, and put them into a Mercy Charities housing project at the cost of millions of dollars, providing housing for less people than were living before in the Dolphin Lee and Rex Court apartments, and essentially using up all the affordable housing money for years and years to come while doing it. But, you know, Mercy Charities Housing, or Mercy Housing California, or Mercy California, whatever they're calling themselves these days, their name has changed a couple times in the last few years, or at least once. They get, they're pleased with all this. They run it. They plan it. They're getting paid for it. And there was a point at which they were going to own it, but I guess they're only now caretaking it for 30 years, thank you very much. And they're the only housing provider that the city uses in terms of this kind of housing. They know there's no competitive bidding, there's no open discussions, and their board meetings are all held in private, behind closed doors, in violation, again, of the Brown Act. And the section of the Brown Act that violates is the section that requires meetings at which there are public officials on the board, meetings at which is funded with public funding, to be open to the public. And Mercy Housing has always refused to have those meetings open to the public. And this, unfortunately, has been supported by Mayor Crone, Mayor Sugar, Mayor Fitzmaurice, all these past council members, not to mention Rotkin, by the way, and Byers, so don't think that they are innocent in any way. They're just as bad. In fact, they were worse. They initiated this process. It's Crone and Fitzmaurice and Sugar carried it on, and Porter and Riley, unfortunately, carrying on the same bad tradition. Anyway, Davidson, I was talking about, is a speaker at City Council. He, too, was cut off trying to talk about the Alibaba's Cafe in the afternoon. And here in the evening, we hear him trying to explain what he was doing. They wouldn't even let him explain it. He tried to raise a point of order, and Kennedy told him, you can't raise a point of order. Only council members can raise a point of order. And I had thought, actually, that was true, too. But the interesting point is that you don't know what the rules are. In other words, is it Robert's Rules of Order? A standard parliamentary textbook that governs city council? Is it a different book? We couldn't get an answer.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, Robert Norris.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. This is
that Aptos demon among... This is the demon, Jerry Henry.
Yeah. I have a couple things that, you know, I was just listening to your show.
Uh-huh.
I wonder when we're going to step away from the Brown Act, which I understand they probably never enforce. I understand you can do a federal Title 42.
That's actually what we're doing.
And when we're going to actually talk about the Under Civil Rights Act in this town, I know you think that's a bygone law that's never enforced, but really I see one that only helps as goes to the Java House and the condition of our town.
Well, I know that I myself would love to see lawsuits undertaken. We're talking the Under Civil Rights Act as a civil or as a criminal action?
Oh, either. Both. When it would be approached. I mean, I've always tried to approach it but I've always gotten boo-hooed about the Unruh Civil Rights Act. And I think if we were going to boo-hoo the Unruh Civil Rights Act, that you might as well boo-hoo the Brown Act.
Right, well, I think they both probably should in a certain way be boo-hooed.
I think we ought to call for them being enforced.
Definitely. But the Under Civil Rights Act, for those who don't know, is the law that says that public accommodations have to be open to everyone, and you can't discriminate against a class of people. And it's really, It was passed by Jesse Unruh, who was Speaker of the Assembly, well, I don't know, 30 or 40 years ago in California. And I don't know of any recent successful cases or unsuccessful cases.
Well, I don't know of anybody bringing it up.
Right.
I've just heard a whole bunch of people boo. I know I've brought it up.
Well, I know you're going to go in the library, the law library, and research this issue with your old pal, Scott Rhodes.
Oh, no, no. I've already actually looked up the Unruh Civil Rights Act and stuff.
Right. What's the
I've
most
I've always
recent,
tried to stand on it quite a bit. Now, my other issue.
Yes.
I got this deal from, you know, you were talking about the homeless summit.
Uh-huh.
And I got this
right to
flyer
sleep
in the mail.
Uh-huh.
And I want to know if a government agent, if you don't think that maybe a government agent picked out that date for that march, seeing as you have a national rainbow gathering on the East Coast on the 4th of July, and they're trying to run this thing on the 10th of July. Mm. Or do you think it's just flat ignorance?
I think it's flat ignorance. Nobody brought up the rainbow family issue, which
I
think
is important. I brought up the rainbow needed to be included.
Well, I mean, I guess you were there for part of the early part of that meeting, which was the California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project. Let me clarify for people what we're talking about. There is a rally planned in Sacramento on July 10th, a Right to Sleep rally, where the Sacramento homeless have invited the homeless of the entire state and those in houses who support them to come to Sacramento with their sleeping bags and stay there until Governor Davis decriminalizes at least the right to sleep, hopefully the right to camp, but at least the right to sleep statewide.
Well, you know, the largest unorganized group is going to have their meeting on July 4th.
Which is the Rainbow Family. Where is that going to be?
Well, I'm not sure, but I've heard it's on the East Coast this year.
Oh, boy. Well.
Which, you know, and I wonder about these organizers, if they're really... You know.
The disorganizers, actually. That's
yeah.
I mean, you can. You know, I'm one of the organizers. I mean, I actually didn't set the date. It was Cliff Crooks of Sacramento who.
Well, see, I remember.
I think he was ignorant.
See, I remember at the meeting that it was going to be a secret date, and I'm going to tell you, I could have been no more disappointed by that date. I guess they could have tried to have it right on the 4th.
Yeah, they thought about that, but the reason they didn't have it on the 4th, I think, was because all the government buildings were going to be closed, and they prefer to have a day when.